can grab your Bibles and turn to Daniel 4. That's where we'll be in a couple of minutes. I want to start with the picture on the right, where a guy's going, yeah. In front of you, in your seat pockets in front of you, you should be able to find a pen and a piece of paper, just a scrap piece of paper. I'd like you to take that out and take a moment and write down your accomplishments. What are a couple of the things that you are most proud of that make you go, yeah, I did it? What are some things that you look back on in your life with pride that you have accomplished? Maybe you put yourself through school, or you taught yourself an instrument, or you landed a job that hundreds of people had applied for and you were the one that got it, or you put food on the table as a single parent, you started a small business, or you got honors or awards in a particular area, or you were captain of the football team or something like that, or you're in medicine and you've saved people's lives, or you bought your first car with cash. You know, whatever it is that you are proud of, would you write something down? Write down an accomplishment that you've had that you look back on and say, yeah, I'm really glad I accomplished this. I'll give you about 20 seconds for that. If you've come up with one or two things, you can find Daniel chapter 4. I don't know if you've seen the movie Shallow Hal, but I like it. Shallow Hal's a good movie. Hal is a guy who's particularly shallow, and he has the experience of being given the opportunity to have this new gift where he no longer looks at people and just sees what's on the outside. Instead, he sees what's on the inside, and so sometimes the things that he sees on the inside are really, really beautiful, and sometimes they're pretty ugly. But whatever it is, he's got this experience where he's seeing past the exterior and only seeing the interior of a person. And interestingly, we are going to get that same Shallow Hal experience this morning as we read about what happens to Nebuchadnezzar. So without further ado, would you please follow along with me in Daniel chapter 4. We're going to read most of this chapter. This is King Nebuchadnezzar speaking at first, and he says, King Nebuchadnezzar, to the nations and peoples of every language who live in all the earth, may you prosper greatly. It is my pleasure to tell you about the miraculous signs and wonders that the Most High God has performed for me. How great are his signs, how mighty are his wonders. His kingdom is an eternal kingdom. His dominion endures from generation to generation. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at home in my palace, contented and prosperous, and I had a dream that made me afraid. As I was lying in bed, the images and visions that passed through my mind terrified me. So I commanded that all the wise men of Babylon be brought before me to interpret the dream for me. When the magicians and enchanters and astrologers and diviners came, I told them the dream, but they could not interpret it for me. Finally, Daniel came into my presence, and I told him the dream. He is called Belteshazzar, after the name of my God, and the spirit of the holy gods is in him. I said, Belteshazzar, chief of the musicians, I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in you, that no mystery is too difficult for you. Here is my dream. Interpret it for me. These are the visions that I saw while lying in my bed. I looked, and there before me stood a tree in the middle of the land. Its height was enormous. The tree grew large and strong, and its top touched the sky. It was visible to the ends of the earth. Its leaves were beautiful, its fruit abundant, and on it was food for all. Under it, the wild animals found shelter, and the birds lived in its branches, and from it every creature was fed. In the visions I saw while lying in bed, I looked, and there before me was a holy one, a messenger, your translation might say watcher, coming down from heaven. He called in a loud voice, cut down the tree and trim off its branches, strip off its leaves and scatter its fruit. Let the animals flee from under it and the birds from its branches. But let the stump and its roots, bound with iron and bronze, remain in the ground, in the grass of the field. Let him be drenched with the dew of heaven, and let him live with the animals among the plants of the earth. Let his mind be changed from that of a man, and let him be given the mind of an animal, till seven times pass by for him. The decision is announced by the messengers. The holy ones declare the verdict so that the living may know that the Most High is sovereign over all kingdoms on earth and gives them to anyone he wishes and sets over them the lowliest of people. This is the dream that I, Nebuchadnezzar, had. Now, Belteshazzar, tell me what it means, for none of the wise men in my kingdom can interpret it for me, but you can, because the spirit of the holy gods is in you. Skip down to verse 24. Daniel replied, "This is the interpretation, your majesty. This is the decree the Most High has issued against the Lord, my lord, the king. You will be driven away from people and will live with wild animals. You will eat grass like the ox and be drenched with the dew of heaven. Seven times will pass by for you until you acknowledge that the Most High is sovereign over all kingdoms on earth and gives them to anyone he wishes." The command to leave the stump of the tree with its roots means that your kingdom will be restored to you when you acknowledge that heaven rules. Therefore, your majesty, be pleased to accept my advice. Renounce your sins by doing what is right. Renounce your wickedness by being kind to the oppressed. It may be that your prosperity will continue. All this happened to King Nebuchadnezzar. 12 months later, as the king was walking on the roof of the royal palace of Babylon, he said, "Is this not the great Babylon that I have built as the royal residence by my mighty power and for the glory of my majesty?" Even as the words were on his lips, a voice came from heaven. "This is what is decreed for you, King Nebuchadnezzar. Your royal authority has been taken from you. You will be driven away from people and will live with wild animals. You will eat grass like the ox. Seven times will pass by for you until you acknowledge that the Most High is sovereign over all the kingdoms of the earth and he gives them to anyone he wishes." Immediately, what had been said about Nebuchadnezzar was fulfilled. He was driven away from people and ate grass like the ox. His body was drenched with the dew of heaven until his hair grew like feathers of an eagle and his nails like the claws of a bird. At the end of that time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, raised my eyes towards heaven and my sanity was restored. Then I praised the Most High and I honored and glorified him who lives forever. Down to verse 36. At the same time that my sanity was restored, my honor and splendor returned to me for the glory of my kingdom. My advisors and nobles sought me out, and I was restored to my throne and became even greater than before. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and exalt and glorify the King of heaven, because everything that he does is right, and all his ways are just, and those who walk in pride, he is able to humble. This is the word of the Lord. Nebuchadnezzar is a big deal. He is the biggest deal in the known world. He is a conqueror. He is an empire builder. He is an architect. He is at the top of the food chain. He is a big deal, and no one else at his time is bigger than he is. He has actually, Babylon has one of the wonders of the ancient world known as the Hanging Gardens. His city has multiple walls. His palace is extraordinary. And you know what? He takes all the credit for his accomplishments. And as a result, he needs to have a shallow hal experience. Now, I want you, if you haven't been with us, to sort of cast your mind back over what has happened in Daniel up to this point, because this doesn't come out of the blue for Nebuchadnezzar. It's not like he has never heard of the God who was going to put him through this shallow hal experience. We are going to see he's a slow learner. So let's just remind ourselves of where we've been. In Daniel chapter 1, we are told that Daniel's God, Yahweh, the God of the Israelites, the people of Israel, gives, that's the word, gives Jerusalem into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar can't take all the credit for it because God gave it to him. Then Nebuchadnezzar starts meeting the exiles. He starts meeting the people who belong to this God. And what he discovers is that actually these people are pretty wise. He starts meeting Daniel and Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego. And he sees that the people who follow this God are actually, they've got a leg up on his other wise men, his other advisors and interpreters. And it's really interesting because Nebuchadnezzar doesn't seem to give God any of the credit for the fact that his people are actually pretty bright here. He's a slow learner. Daniel chapter 2, God sends Nebuchadnezzar some dreams. You might remember this. He sends him a dream, and then he's so troubled by it that he calls his advisors, and he wants them not only to tell them the interpretation of the dream, he first wants them to tell him the dream itself. He's not willing to tell them. He's asking them for the impossible, and they tell him, that's impossible. No one can do that except the gods, and they don't live with people. We don't have access to what it is that you are asking for. Well, Daniel comes forward, and he says, I'm not any smarter than anyone else here, but I have access to the one who has the answers. He goes away, he prays with his friends, and he comes back, and he gives Nebuchadnezzar not only the interpretation of the dream, but he gives him the dream itself first. He tells him what he dreamed. Nebuchadnezzar, as a result of this, acknowledges that Daniel's God is unlike any other God because he is a revealer of mysteries and Daniel has access to him. And as a result of that, Nebuchadnezzar praises Daniel and vicariously Daniel's God through that. He started to acknowledge who this God is. It doesn't seem to sink in, though. Because in Daniel chapter 3, Nebuchadnezzar is already putting up this statue and telling everyone else that they need to worship it. Things haven't sunk in for him. He is a slow learner. As a result, Nebuchadnezzar throws the people who are not willing to bow down to the statue, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, he throws them into the fire. Fiery furnace. You know this story, right? They say, we're not going to bow down. So he says, okay, if you're not, you're toast. And his words are, and what God will be able to rescue you from my hands? And they said, it doesn't matter, we're not bowing down. Well, God rescues them from the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar acknowledges it at the end of the story. Nebuchadnezzar says, no other God could have rescued you from my hand except your God. Nebuchadnezzar has had some ongoing, personal, and profound revelations of who it is that Daniel and his gods, Daniel and his friends serve, who Daniel's God is. This is not some sort of random experience for Nebuchadnezzar. By the time we hit Daniel chapter 4 and he's had this next dream, and then the experience that results from it, he already knows who Daniel's God is. Okay? Problem is that he is a slow learner and it hasn't really made a difference to him. So once again, here we are in Daniel chapter 4 and God sends Nebuchadnezzar another dream and Daniel must interpret it. And once again, this dream is an object lesson. This is a tree that reaches up into heaven and someone says, this tree needs to be cut down and it needs to become an animal. The tree becomes an animal, weirdly enough, but this is what happens. And the person offering the first interpretation in, as part of the dream, known as a messenger or a watcher, says that Nebuchadnezzar needs to learn two things from this experience. One, that God is sovereign, in other words, that God is in charge. And two, that Nebuchadnezzar was actually given that kingdom. He's not on top by accident, and he's not on top simply because of all of the good things that he has done. He did not build that kingdom by himself. Both of those points are related to Nebuchadnezzar's pride, which he acknowledges at the very end, the very last verse. Now, Daniel, as he is giving Nebuchadnezzar the interpretation of the dream, notice that he says that there's already an opportunity for repentance. God gave this to you as a warning, and I'm here now to warn you that you can actually avoid all of this pain and suffering if you simply amend your ways, humble yourself, and start showing justice to the people that you are actually oppressing. He has an opportunity to learn before he makes a mistake, another mistake. And he is actually in the same position that we are in. We have been given this opportunity here as we read this text to learn from another person's mistakes so that we don't have to go through the same thing. Smart people can learn from their own mistakes. Wise people can learn from the mistakes of others. Let's be wise people. Nebuchadnezzar is not yet wise. And no sooner in the text has he been given this interpretation of the dream than, although it says 12 months later, it's the next verse in the text. It's like it didn't even make a difference for Nebuchadnezzar. He's offered the warning, and it happens right after this. Right after it, he has not yet learned. So you'll see what he says on the screen. Is this not, he's out on his palace, right? He's looking out over his kingdom, one of the wonders of the ancient world, this amazing architecture. He's got all of this power, and he looks out over it, and he says, is this not the great Babylon that I have built as my royal residence by my mighty power and for the glory of my majesty? I did this with my own two hands and my blood and my sweat and my tears, but it was me, me, me. I am the brains of the operation. I get all of the credit. And you know what? A lot of what he says, you know, he's not entirely wrong. As I said, Babylon was a beautiful ancient city, wonder of the ancient world. And he is the most powerful ruler at that time. And everything in his world is reinforcing that he is on top. Everyone is at his beck and call. You know, his people work and fight for him. He's got final say. He does deserve some of the credit, but he doesn't deserve all of the credit. He doesn't give God any of the credit, and as a result, he needs to learn a lesson. He's had multiple opportunities to learn better, and he hasn't. And so you see, the messenger says, the voice from heaven, you will be driven away from people. You will live with the wild animals. You'll eat grass like the ox. Seven times will pass by for you until you acknowledge that the Most High, God, is sovereign over all kingdoms. And this is really, really important, and he gives them to whomever he wishes. So the result is this tree is cut down and turned into a beast, and that's what happens. Nebuchadnezzar is driven away from his people, and he becomes a beast. And I know this looks weird, and I know this looks arbitrary, but in the thinking of the ancient world, especially if you live and breathe Genesis, this isn't really weird or arbitrary. The hierarchy, if you think in terms of Genesis, is God, people, beasts, right? People occupy that middle position to reflect God into the world. This is the image of God language that we talk about from time to time, right? If you put yourself in God's position, what you do is you take this and the mirror goes like this, and now you start reflecting the beasts. Nebuchadnezzar has a shallow hell experience. He is shown what he actually looks like on the inside. He has lost some of his humanity because he put himself on top. God, people, creation. We occupy that middle spot. And he, as he tries to put himself up, ends up down here. He ends up as a beast. And that's the shallow hell experience for him. He gets a picture of what he has become, what his pride has made him. He thinks he is a god, and he has had to become a beast in order to be reminded that he is only human, only in the middle. He puts himself on top, and he gives himself all the credit, and he loses his humanity, at least for a time. Nebuchadnezzar needs to remember that the Most High is sovereign over all. That's what the text says. And he needs to remember that the kingdom was given to him. He didn't earn it. He didn't build it all himself. Even while he was using his own brains and his own money and his own people and his own power, there is still another factor involved in Nebuchadnezzar's success. The accomplishments that he has has accomplished, you know, what he has done in his life, as wonderful as it is, it's not the whole picture. God was involved in that at the same time, and he didn't give God the credit for the position that he was in or the power that he had or the accomplishments that he had managed to do, right? Now, what about you and me? So you still have that piece of paper where you wrote down some of your accomplishments? Take a look at it again. Take a look at your accomplishments. What is it that you are proud of? I'd like you to take a moment and write down what are the things that were given to you that made it possible for you to accomplish what it is that you accomplished. What are the things that you can't actually take credit for that are part and parcel of that accomplishment, that you could not have achieved what you achieved had it not been for some of these other factors that were given to you? I'd like you to take a moment to reflect on that. Who gave you the ability to work hard? Who prayed for you during hard times as you were sweating it out to accomplish whatever you accomplished? What opportunities were you given, like education, that are part of what you accomplished? How did your family upbringing contribute to what it is that you accomplished? You know, so for example, was there healthy food on your table as you were growing up? Did some people actually care that you learned to read or that you did well in school? What about being born into a country where there are so many opportunities and so many good gifts to us? What about the fact that you actually didn't build your own IQ that was given to you? Could take a minute and actually write down what are some of the things that can have contributed to your own accomplishment that you cannot take credit for. It's not overly surprising that someone who is proud and someone who thinks that they're on top and that the world actually revolves around them, someone who gives themselves all the credit for their own successes, it's not really surprising that someone who hasn't acknowledged that much of what they have, they don't actually deserve the credit for. If they have not acknowledged that, if they think that all it takes is hard work, and that nothing was actually given to me, I just earned all of this, I'm a self-made person, it's not surprising that a person like that is actually going to treat other people as though they just need to work harder to pull themselves up and improve their own lives. Pride, you know, I am a self-made person. Pride and compassion compete. Do you understand that? We really do need to understand that. If you give yourself all of the credit for whatever it is that you have accomplished in your life and you don't recognize that there were other contributing factors to it, you are going to treat people as though they just need to work as hard as you tell yourself you worked, and then they can improve their own lives. Pride can actually produce injustice, as it did for Nebuchadnezzar. And if you notice in the text, that is one of the things that Daniel says that Nebuchadnezzar needs to do as part of his repentance and reform, is to show mercy and compassion to the people that he has been oppressing. He is a self-made person. He looks out over the Babylon that he has made, and he says, I deserve all the credit, and if you're on the bottom, well, you didn't work as hard as I did. Do you understand how pride and compassion compete? Now, that's Nebuchadnezzar. But you know what? I've seen this attitude in my own life, and I have encountered it so many times. Homeless people just need to clean themselves up. Addicts just need to stop using. Indigenous people just need to get over it and join Canadian society and quit griping. All these other people just need to work hard like me. Do you see how this is actually pride produces injustice? Pride competes against compassion. Proud people have forgotten all of the things that contributed to the successes that they have that they can't take credit for. And then they tell other people that they just need to pull themselves up to improve their own lives. And they're not aware of the factors involved in my own success and in someone else's failures, and the things that kind of keep them down. Situations are just so much more complicated than these simple answers like, you just need to work harder. So much more complicated. So let me just ask you, what if your mom drank while she was pregnant with you? And so now you're born with FASD, which means that you can't make a connection between action and consequence because there's pieces in your brain that don't make that link. What happens if you can't actually plan ahead? Because again, that piece in your brain isn't making the link. You can't plan for your future. What if you grew up in a home where food was scarce? And so that became your number one priority, was making sure that you just had enough. You couldn't think about other people. You couldn't even think about planning ahead for your next day because all you can think about is the hunger in your own stomach. What if you grew up in a home where no one cared whether or not you ever learned to read? How far would you make it in life if you couldn't read? What if no one ever told you that you mattered? What if the only ways that you could make money involved giving favors? What if all you ever wanted was an escape because your life was this awful, and then the escape that someone finally offers you, it gets you out of it for a little while, but it comes in the form of a needle or a rolling paper or a bottle? What if the people who say that they want to help you actually look like they're part of a system that kept your particular people on the bottom for a long time? Life is just more complicated, friends. It's more complicated than just work harder, pull yourself together, man. And Nebuchadnezzar has to learn this the hard way. Let's learn from him. So, what would we be? What would we be without some of these factors that have been given to us that we can't take credit for? Pride produces... Let me go back to that later. One of the things that I think can prevent this, as we have been touching on, is if you actually did write down what it is that contributed to your success. Because we've been celebrating Thanksgiving, right? We offer some of these things back in gratitude to God and recognize that what I have was actually given to me in so many ways. And the more grateful that we are, the more it will help prevent us from falling into this trap. This trap of telling ourselves that we are self-made, and this trap of putting other people down because they just need to, you know, toughen up, measure up, work harder, pull yourself together, man, that kind of thing. Gratitude is actually a key to this. So I'd actually like to take a couple moments to share. I don't want you to share your accomplishments. What I'd like you to do is just call out whatever it was that actually contributed to that accomplishment that you can't take credit for. What is it that God gave you, the wonderful gift that God has given you, that has contributed to something, you know, going right and well in your life? What has God given you? Call it out.
Sleep.
Oh my goodness. I hear you. Yes. Sleep. Yeah. Wow. life falls apart if you can't sleep. Yeah. Wonderful. And actually, Scripture does say at one point that sleep is a gift that God gives, and I have quoted that to him as I have not been able to sleep before. Yes. What has God given you?
Christian parents.
Christian parents. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Yeah, I am so grateful for the good upbringing that I had. And that was part of my own judgmentalism at times, was that I didn't even recognize how much of a gift that was when I was, you know, in my mind thinking about the guy pushing that cart of cans down the street. Yeah, good one. All of the basic needs were met and more every day. Didn't just took them for granted, right? They were there. Didn't have to think about them. We could actually put our mental energies, our emotional energy into accomplishing something more than making sure I survived the next day. Yeah. What are the other things that God has given you?
People.
People. Yeah. Not just parents, but good influences. So grateful for the Christian friends that I had going to a public high school and how much I needed that. And I often reflect on the way that I could have gone in some other different directions because, you know what, I'm not self-made. I'm influenced in so many ways by the people around me, and you can only take so much pressure. But sometimes, you know, that works both ways, right? There's negative peer pressure, but there's also positive peer pressure as well. And that's one of the reasons that we do this, right? We kind of get together every Sunday for a collective positive peer pressure. That's a good thing. Yeah. What else? What has God given you that has contributed to something going well in your life?
Good looks. I mean, good health.
I think Rob commented on my good looks and his good health. Was that, yeah. It doesn't hurt, right? Yeah, health. It's funny. Health is a wonderful thing to share in recognizing that we're given so much and we have a certain amount of wiggle room. We can improve our health to a certain degree. And a lot of it is also a roll of the dice. And we don't know where, you know, why some people seem to last longer and they smoke 2 packs a day. And other people, it's like, you know, they did everything right and dropped dead far too early. Yeah, our health is given to us much more than I think we realize. Wonderful.
Talents and gifts.
Talents and gifts, yes. That's why we call them gifts, right? And then so often we take credit for the thing. It was given to me. And from time to time, you know, someone will, maybe once a year, someone will say, "Good sermon, Ben." my quip often back is, you know, I rely on divine intervention, and part of that is it's a recognition that, you know, these things are more given, and we steward them. You're certainly right. Like Nebuchadnezzar, it's not that Nebuchadnezzar deserves no credit. He does. He did some great things. It's just that he doesn't deserve all the credit, and he has given himself all the credit. But gifts are given. We ought to be thinking about the giver a little bit more. Yeah. I was born into a country like this that didn't have warfare all around it. Yeah. Peace. Yep. You're absolutely right. Yeah, this country doesn't have an absence of war. It has all of these safety nets and ways that help us to take our next steps and improve and become a better person. Yeah, absolutely. Spoken by a nurse, right? Like we take these things for granted. And every once in a while, I meet an American who's like, "You have free healthcare." Like, oh yeah, I totally forgot about that. Like, but you're right. That this is the envy of most of the rest of the world, right? What we take for granted.
No. Humility.
God gave us humility.
Yeah, teaches us humility.
God teaches us humility.
A lot of
Mm-hmm. Yeah, humility could be a gift too. Yep. It's something that we learn as God gives us the opportunity for that, and he has given us the opportunity to reflect on texts like this, right, that remind us that we aren't the be-all and the end-all, that it's about more than just us, that I'm not the top of the food chain. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Trials and hardships. Jody, wow. Yes. Yeah, God does not just give us good things. Some of the things are difficult, and God uses them to refine our character. Right? And that those can be seen as a gift. Mm-hmm. Yep. And that, as we learned last week, that God is not just rescuing us from the fire, as happens from time to time, but is in the fire with us, regardless of the outcome. Mm-hmm. Well done. Thank you for sharing. I have maybe time for a question or two if something has come to mind, and then we'll just close. Okay. I found this, you know, that it's sort of a downer in the middle of the message, but, you know, Nebuchadnezzar learns his lesson, and there's some hope in that. If you notice at the very beginning of the passage, Nebuchadnezzar introduces what happens, and he sends this out as sort of his message to, you know, the peoples that he oversees. And you notice it, his words are a contrast to his reflection later on, where in his reflection later on, he says, I was at home in my palace, and I was content and prosperous, and then, you know, it was all about me, all credit to me. But notice his words, that was before. And then his reflection on that at the end, after he has learned his lesson, is that he praises God, he gives him the credit, but then he also goes one step further, and he says to all of the peoples of the land, may you prosper greatly. His focus has changed. It's not just himself that he's focused on. He is now focused on God the Most High and giving him the credit, because he's learned that the kingdom was given to him, because it was also given back to him at the end of his episode. But he's also recognized that he is on top, not just for his own sake, but also for the sake of the other people. May you prosper greatly. You know, pride and compassion aren't competing anymore, because pride's been dealt with. I think that is a wonderful, wonderful picture of hope for us, because we are all going to wrestle with this. We are all going to give ourselves more credit. We are all going to forget that we are not on top. And we are all going to talk about other people from time to time like the solution to their problems is more simple than it is. And this text reminds us that there's hope for that. And we can learn from this text as a result. I'm going to offer you a moment for reflection before we can. Worship is about acknowledging that everything that we have comes from God. We need to acknowledge the givenness of so much of our lives. And so I pray, my prayer for you is that we go in peace, remembering the givenness of life.